On Monday, we read from your letters. During our show on the role of oil in the Iraq crisis, Richard Anderson wrote in to counter the charge that oil is at the heart of it all. It's silly to attribute our conflict with Iraq solely to oil. It cheapens the anti-war movement's much deeper and complex thinking. But oil is an excellent symbol for what the war is really about, which is U.S. interests. Oil perfectly represents our single-minded obsession with our own economic stability and our go-go-go drive to constantly improve our American way of life. Jim Forsland, who also wrote in during that program, asked us to consider these statistics reported in the Baltimore Sun. Iraqis now living in exile, 1 in 5. Iraqis killed in war or government purges since Saddam Hussein took office in 1979, about 700,000. Do the math, says Jim. The math indicates that the Iraqi people would be better off with a war that removes Hussein. Our show on being the first brought in a wealth of stories from our listeners. Here are a few more. From Kathy Espy of Columbus, Ohio. My father, Dr. Frank Duffy, was the first black man to live in the dormitory at Michigan State University. When he arrived on the campus from his hometown of Toledo, Ohio, he and his parents found he was to be housed in the basement on a cot next to the furnace. His parents raised the roof, got the NAACP of Detroit involved, and ended up integrating Wells Hall, still standing today. He is now 85 and a retired dentist in Toledo, Ohio. And from Lee Stevens in Lakewood, Ohio, this might sound a little odd, but I did have a first as a male. Back in 1994, I was trying to lose weight and began going to my company's fitness center during lunch. After trying several exercise regimes, I finally joined the step aerobic class. I was the only male in the class. My male coworkers teased me about it a bit, but nothing like what I received from the women. After a month, another man joined the class, then another. By the end of 4 months, when I gave up aerobics and took up running, over a third of the class were men. We also received a lot of callers with being the first stories. We follow up now on one we didn't have time to air, but first...
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Candlestick Park for the final game of a three-game series between the visiting Houston Astros and your San Francisco Giants.
Joining me now on the phone from her home in Walnut Creek, California, is Sherry Davis, who in 1993 became the first female public address announcer in Major League Baseball, or in any major sport for that matter. Thanks for joining us, Sherry.
Thank you very much.
How did this come about? Was it a hard barrier to break?
Well, new management had taken over, and they had open auditions, and 500 people showed up. What's interesting is of those 500, only 8 women showed up to audition. And most of those women auditioned just for the fun of it without any thought of actually getting the job. As a matter of fact, the first woman I heard did this horrible, horrible imitation and announced Barry Sweet Buns Bonds, which caused many groans and really lit a fire under me because she just reinforced every negative stereotype about a woman fan, you know.
Did you have any experience with this?
No, I had a theater and voice background, and I was a huge baseball fan. Thank goodness I knew baseball really well. I was the scorekeeper for my section in the stands and had followed baseball for many years.
First usually paved the way for others. Did that happen in your case?
Yes, it did. For 1 year, there was a woman announcer for the Red Sox. The year after that, there was a woman announcer for hockey for the Stars. And there's still a woman announcer for the Giants. But as far as I know, that's it.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Sherry Davis joined us from Walnut Creek, California, where she now announces women's basketball games. And finally, our segment on the anniversary of TV dinners brought in a surprising number of emails nostalgic for the frozen fare. Here's one from Thomas Hobel in Ithaca, New York. Recently, in the frozen food aisle in our local supermarket, I overheard an amusing conversation between two college women doing their shopping. Staring at the freezing case, one woman said, "Where's the real food?" The other said, "What do you mean, the TV dinners?" "Yeah," replied the first. It was hard for me to get down the aisle without bursting into laughter.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away?
Everybody knows your name.
We read from your letters every Monday. Send us an email. Our address is totn@npr.org. Please remember to put the topic in the subject line and include your name, how you pronounce it, and where you live. Talk of the Nation is directed by Rolando Arrieta. Our producers are Susan Lund, Setsuko Sato, Justine Kennan, and Muthoni Motari. Our production assistant is Brendan Banasek, and our interns are T.K. Dalton and Daniel Riemann. Kevin Wade is our technical director, and he's had help from Vince Muse, Drew Reynolds, and Chris Nelson. Ellen Silva is the senior editor, Sue Goodwin is the senior producer, and Leith Bishop is our executive producer. I'm Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.